So I've been telling you about this new sci-fi series, Falling Skies, starting up with a two-hour premiere on TNT this Sunday night at 8 o'clock. And it's from executive producer Steven Spielberg and DreamWorks Television. And it stars Noah Wyle, you know, who's here now. And Noah, you know, you play Tom Mason, and it makes it kind of ironic that Falling Skies starts up on Father's Day.
I play a father of three. Two of my boys are with me, and my middle son has been abducted by the aliens, as have many, many adolescents who seem to be pressed into some kind of slave labor force, but I know where he is, and it's the initial conflict is wanting to go and get him back and keep my family alive in the context of being given this larger responsibility of caring for these 300 civilians and leading them out of Boston away from where I know my son is.
Yeah, you're right. As a dad, it was a pretty powerful two-hour premiere, and you're going to see it this Sunday night at 8 o'clock, and then watch Falling Skies unfold every week, every Sunday night at 9 on TNT. But don't wait till Sunday. Join the resistance now at fallingskies.com.
In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. We've got a double feature for you today. We're going to be talking with Jeff Lemire of DC Comics, the writer of Sweet Tooth, Superboy, Frankenstein and the Creature Commandos. We talk about his Flashpoint miniseries and a little bit of a preview of what's to come after the DC reboot. Plus, we discuss his current book, Sweet Tooth and Superboy. We'll also be talking to cast members and crew of the TNT series Falling Skies. It debuts on Father's Day this Sunday. It is at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, the two-hour premiere, and then weekly it's going to be on at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, 9 p.m. Central. But talks with Noah Wyle, Moon Bloodgood, the two co-stars of the show, in addition to Mark Verheiden, the co-executive producer, and an old familiar friend, if you listen to Word Balloon, a great comic book writer and past writer of shows like Battlestar Galactica and Heroes. And we'll also be talking to Greg Beeman, who directed the Smallville finale and is directing some episodes of Falling Skies, also directed a couple episodes of Heroes and lots of seasons of Smallville. So great conversations about Falling Skies and the work of Jeff Lemire today on Word Balloon. It's all brought to you by the Summit City Comic Con. It's happening this Saturday, June 18th, from 10 in the morning until 6 p.m. in the evening, and it's a great one-day show. Over 150 comic creators will be on hand, among them some of our local friends like Mike Norton, Steve Bryant, Kyle Latino. Lots of great people are going to be there. Special guests, Gary Friedrich, the creator of Ghost Rider, and Dennis Cohen. Very excited about Dennis Cohen, one of the great Milestone creators, the guy who helped reboot The Question back in the 80s with Denny O'Neill, and has done so much great work in comics and animation over the last few years. I'll have the pleasure of interviewing Dennis at a panel at the Summit City Comic Con, in addition to a digital comics panel that I'm doing. So if you're anywhere in the tri-state area, make out a point of going down to Fort Wayne, Indiana, the Grand Wayne Center. That's where the Summit City Comic Con is happening. And again, it's Saturday from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. Just $10, a great chance to get great art. Wonderful artists are going to be there doing sketches. Guys like Tom Scioli are going to be there. Tim Seeley, so many great artists in the local area. The Four Star Studio is going to be there. Josh Emmons, Mike Norton, Sean Dove, and Tim Seeley. So really great time. Katie Cook is going to be there. Very, very happy to see all my old friends at the Summit City Comic Con. It's put on by our friends at Discount Comic Book Service and InStockTrades.com. Do yourself a favor. Be there Saturday. For all the details, go to their website, SummitCityComicCon.com. Let's start things off with our conversation with Jeff Lemire right here on Word Balloon. Now, I should warn you that we had a little bit of compression problem. This was done via Skype, and it might sound like the speed is going just a little faster than normal. You'll forgive me. So I sound like I'm 14 again. But it's very clear, and I think you'll enjoy this conversation with Jeff right here on Word Balloon. Man, can I just say, people who are listening to this right now, you wouldn't believe the Alexander Graham Bell, Mr. Watson kind of nonsense Lemire and I have just gone through.
Well, we actually, John and I have been trying to record since 2009. It takes 2 years for the connection to come through.
No, but I mean, really, since the end of...
the Sweet Tooth while I waited for the connection.
Since the end of 2010, we've been talking about doing a new show. So I'm glad to have you back, man.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I think the only other time we talked I don't even think Sweet Tooth had started coming out yet. I think I sent you PDFs of the first couple issues, so it's been a while.
I think we talked about Sweet Tooth in the
first. Yeah, but it hadn't even started coming out, though. It was like a week or two before. So, yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, let me just say how much I enjoy the series.
Oh, thanks.
And no, it's lived up to expectations, and Raphael does such a wonderful job coloring you. And
Jose Villarubia.
I'm sorry, Jose Villarubia.
Yes.
I don't know why I thought Albuquerque was coloring you.
No, he did the cover for Superboy, so there might be some confusion there.
There you go. I got all my Lemire wires crossed. But Jose does it's a wonderful job of coloring. You're right. And you know something, Jeff, because I think I was only getting kind of subtle colors in those PDFs that you first sent me. And wow.
He's great. He's great to work with. We have a really great relationship. And I don't know, I just give him total freedom because I don't really understand color, so I just let him do it, you know?
Interesting.
And I think he really appreciates sort of how open it is, and you can just experiment and stuff. And now we kind of have a little common language going between us where I think we're doing some cool stuff in the last, you know, maybe 10 issues or so really look great. So
very cool. A really interesting point right now in the story. You're just midway through this current story where they've found refuge in a dam.
Yeah.
And, we're learning a little bit more about the background. It happens with every arc, of course, but, you know, Bobby is such a sweet character. And honestly, Jeff, no matter what you write, you're always tearing at my heart, man, because every time I see poor little Bobby, I always just, oh, that poor little beaver.
Well, he dies next issue. Just because you said that, I'm going to make you cry.
See? Seriously, man. But it's
Bobby is actually my homage to Bob Schreck, my original editor, who was born on Groundhog's Day. So Bobby's the groundhog. That's Bob.
That's fantastic.
I debated when Bob got fired from DC. I debated having a guard in the militia camp named Warner kill Bobby, but I didn't do it.
Yeah, too close, too soon, man. Too soon. That's awesome. No, that's terrific. And I feel the parallels of your series and Kirkman's Walking Dead, but they are still two very distinct series. And I'm really pleased with how you're still managing to make it this amazing chase, you know, as they're being pursued and everything. And the dam just kind of there's some touches of Lost and I'd say Walking Dead in this particular.
Yeah, I can see the Dharma Project and Project Evergreen kind of it's seeming like there might be a bit similar there. So yeah. But it's going to go, there's a big twist coming there. I don't want to give it away, but it's going to flip everything upside down again, really soon. So.
Excellent. When we were, before we started recording, I asked you if where things stood in terms of I was wondering if Vertigo was affected at all with all the DC reboot talk and everything. And if, Sweet Tooth's run would be affected in any way, but you were reassuring me, no, that's not the case.
They're rebooting it, so J.T. Kroll is writing it, and Dan Jurgens is drawing.
Nice. And I remember you said initially you thought that Sweet Tooth might run till 30, but now you're thinking even a little.
Yeah, it just keeps growing. I mean, originally I thought 30 max, and, you know, I'm on 25 right now, and just over halfway through what I want to do. So I think it feels like it's going towards 50 really, which surprises me, but I'm happy about it. I'm not sick of the world or the characters yet, and I just keep getting more ideas that I want to do with them. So, I mean, the ending's always been there, and it's locked, but it's just sort of the journey to get there sort of is expanding and growing, and that's sort of what keeps you interested and excited about it. So.
Sure, and both from a storytelling standpoint and also from a readership standpoint, it is the journey. So that's great. And no, it's still very fresh, and I really do. I think you do a good job of combining tension with humor and the pathos that I think, like I said, that I feel when I see poor little Bobby, but really all the animals, all the birds. But it's really cool, man. I appreciate the world that you're building here.
Thanks.
And I can only imagine what's going to happen when we get near the end.
I'm trying to experiment visually a lot too recently with format and things. And I made a comment earlier that I don't understand color very well, but I actually just did my first fully painted interiors for this issue I'm working on now that I've never painted any comics before. So I did a whole issue, but myself in watercolor number 24, which it was really fun and it looks great. So I can't wait for that to come out.
Fantastic. Excellent. Yeah. Yeah, so we're recording 23 just came out, correct?
22 came out, 22, yeah. I finished drawing 24 yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's – go ahead.
No, that's it.
Oh, okay. I wanted to ask two of – you know, obviously there's DC Reboot talk to talk about. There's Flashpoint stuff to talk about. We will get to it, but I want to acknowledge a couple things of the current stuff that you've got out there. First of all, congratulations on the Eisner for Super.
Oh, yeah, thanks. That was
fantastic. Sweet.
It's quite a surprise, to be honest with you. I thought if I were going to get nominated for anything, it might be Sweet Tooth again, but I didn't expect anything for Superboy. But it's very flattering. You know, it was a real departure for me to write superhero comics, and I didn't know how people would react following my other work, that jump. But, you know, people seem to be accepting that it's a completely different kind of thing that I'm doing. And, you know, Sweet Tooth and Essex County stuff are very different from Superboy, but it's, it seems to have found a readership all its own, and people seem to be appreciating it. So it's gratifying. Yeah.
Well, those quiet moments, I think, when you know, Superboy is either by himself or even the conversation that he had Kid Flash during their race, those moments, I think, kind of touch a little bit in the Sweet Tooth and Essex County areas.
Their personal relationships with between the characters and stuff, that's kind of my strength. So I can see my voice coming through a bit with that stuff. But, you know, it's very hard to – when doing superhero comics, to find those quiet moments the way I can with Sweet Tooth or something, because they're so much more plot, they're much more plot driven in general than the character based stuff that I do. So it really is a different way of approaching it. But you know, that's what you try to do is deliver what the fans expect with action and superheroes and stuff, to still try to get your personality in there somewhere. So it's you know, I think I'm getting better at it as I go, and I think when we talk about my new DC stuff soon in a few minutes. I think these new things that I'm working on are all a step above Superboy, just in terms of that, in terms of me being able to bring my personality to some things.
Well, I've enjoyed seeing the different choices you've made in terms of the cast for Superboy. The Phantom Stranger has always been one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And I also know in our conversations and also reading articles and interviews that you've done, your affection for those C and D level DC characters.
Very much so, yes.
And Phantom Stranger is really the last guy I expected to find in a Superboy comic.
Yeah, but that's what makes it cool. Stranger. You find two characters that you wouldn't expect to see together, and then you automatically get this interesting tension, you know. And
definitely.
You know, you take Smallville and this perfect Americana and Superboy, and then you throw in one of the weird mystical characters, and then it just becomes – that's what, you know, gives it a different kind of personality and character. And I've always loved Phantom Stranger, and I think there's a lot of potential for that character because there's so much mystery to his past and stuff. And I think I can't wait for issue 10 to come out, because that one's almost all Phantom Stranger. And it's also – it's got the Viking Prince and Arion in it as well. So, I don't know how they let me get away with it, because I think Superboy only appears in like the last three pages.
That's fantastic. Well, and I also loved that Western interlude that we got in 8. And you know, I didn't have a chance to go back and pull out my trade of the Kents. But I'm wondering, you know, did you go – yeah, I was going to say, did you go back to the Ostrander story?
Yeah, it does. I really wanted to get Tim Truman to draw that sequence.
Oh!
Yeah, we couldn't work it out for whatever reason. So, but yeah, I reread that stuff and tried to make it all fit with that. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
That's excellent. And also, you know, the importance of Martha Kent. And I only look forward to whatever mystery you got brewing with. clutching Bobby to her bosom.
Yeah, Stranger kills her. Sorry.
Take a drink. Anytime I mention somebody and Jeff says that, you know, he dies or she dies, that means that it's time to take another drink, obviously. It's a game that we like to play where Jeff just claws at my heart and rips out these people that I love. And, yeah, they're dead. Well, that's good.
Yeah, Martha Kent's fun. She's she's the heart of Smallville. So, you know, she's pretty easy to write. And she's Connor's center and is, you know, what keeps him grounded. So, she's an important character, I think, to have in that world with so many crazy things going on. It's important to have an anchor like her that you can go back to. So.
Well, and it's fun comparing your Superboy to the Silver Age Superboy that I read growing up, and his relationships, and you know, whether it's Lori Luthor or you know, and I'm blanking on his Simon, thank you. Yes, Simon, who absolutely...
Who's really the actual star of the book. But he's the best character ever. I thank Jeff Johns in my head every day for giving me him. He's so fun to write.
Well, and it's this almost young Luther that kind of in that first chapter of Superboy, when Luther and Superboy were still friends, but you kind of obviously can sense the darkness that's coming.
Yeah, the good thing about him is that we don't know. There's definitely potential there that, you know, he could end up like Luthor, but unlike with the Superman Luthor thing, you always knew Luthor would end up bad because we knew who they were when they grew up, right?
Sure.
This is still an open book, so that's what I think it's fun, is that you don't, you know, there's potential for him to be good or bad, and it's unwritten still, so, you know, there is actual tension there where you have to wait and see what happens.
And this kid from the future that obviously has a little plot going on, and yeah. We're well into his scheme, but not really sure what's going to unfold, so that's kind of neat. It's great, man, and you're balancing all that, too, with, of course, you know, people expected to see the Teen Titans in this book, and I think you've delivered there as well.
Yeah, a little bit. I didn't want to overdo it because, I mean, JT's doing the Titans, and Superboy's in that book every month, so what's the point of me doing it, too? You know, I might as well, if I'm going to do a Superboy story, I want to deliver something that was unique from what he was doing there, or else what's the point of having two books if they're just doing the same thing, you know? So.
Understood. But even, like, was it 2 issues ago where you kind of showed that alternate, history and future and everything? And, again, it's this great combination of humor and darkness, and you got horror down. And, I mean, that's the thing. I really think that, as you say, you clearly are getting stronger as being a superhero writer and able to kind of incorporate all these different shades into this one book.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's fun. I tried to do all – my model for the book was All-Star Superman, just because I feel like that's probably the best contemporary superhero comic of the last 10 years or something. But for me, if I was going to do a Superman book, that was sort of the model. So, you know, he just combined that crazy Silver Age sensibility of those big ideas, you know, but just delivered it with such a modern sensibility. Grant Morrison, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I tried to do with Superboy, is take that great, fun Silver Age Superboy feel, but, you know, again, bring a modern sensibility to the way it's told. And, you know, it's nowhere near All-Star Superman, but it's, you know, if you can get somewhere in that playing field, I think it's a success.
Very cool. Who's breathing on the other end there?
I'm sorry, that's me.
Or is that you drawing?
It was me playing with my iPhone, sorry.
Oh, no worries. I'm just curious. No problem.
Lucky I was just playing with my iPhone.
Exactly. Let's keep it. Whatever you're doing, it's your iPhone that you're stroking, and that's fine. That's your business. Now, your Superboy story wraps up in August.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I mean, this is obviously going to lead into the next part of our conversation, I think. But
yes.
Unfortunately, that will be my last issue of Superboy. I had planned to do more with it, and but DC's reboot plans and everything came up, and it changed things. So I had to make the best of it. And to be honest, I got to say, I think this storyline was really originally going to stretch out probably into issue 15 or 16 or something like that. And when I had to wrap it up in issue 11, at first I was pretty disappointed and worried about doing it. But I think, to be perfectly honest, I think in the end it's probably a better story. It's I cut out a lot of the fat that probably wasn't needed, and I got right down to it. And I think it's a little more economical and probably a funner finale to the whole thing that I have planned now. So I think it worked out.
That's cool, and I hope with the Eisner nomination, that means that we'll get trades, because
there is the first trades. I think it's the fall or something. So
cool, that's great. Well, that's and obviously Jeff's just came out with his adventure stories of Connor and everything, and they. I mean, that's the thing. I am all for the DC reboot. I really am. And I'm very excited. And, you know, I have lived through DC reboots before, you know, going back to the original Crisis. And even, you know, just the tweaks that happened, I think, as a little kid that I saw in the 70s. So I'm all for it. But it's a shame, because I really think your Superboy, and certainly what was happening in the Batman office as well, JT on Green Arrow, there's been some really interesting stories that unfortunately have to wrap up, you know.
Some of the stuff that was working is gonna keep going, you know.
Okay.
Just might be slightly tweaked. Like, I know JT's still doing Green Arrow.
Very true.
I know more than I can say, probably, but
as we're talking,
I know a lot of what's coming. You know, I probably know about half of the books and who's doing them and stuff. But there's still a big big question mark. I don't know everything yet. You know, I honest to God do not know what's going on with Superboy. Yeah, there's still a lot of mystery for me, which is kind of fun.
Well, one thing that I know you could talk about right now is what's going on with Flashpoint.
Yeah.
And well, and also tell me, and now you said how obviously you had to kind of shorten things up with Superboy.
Yeah.
But just in terms of Flashpoint and now the reboot and stuff, I haven't had the opportunity to talk to a creator and say, hey, you know, what'd you feel? Were you excited? Were you frustrated? A combination of both, but, you know, tell me.
With the reboot?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was super excited. I mean, I've known about this in different capacity or some capacity for quite a while. I didn't really know the extent of the reboot until much more recently, but I'm really excited about it because especially now I'm working on my books, my new books, and it's obvious there's a big shift there. I've been given so much more freedom with these two new books to tell the stories I want to tell. And I can just tell that they're really, really giving people a lot more free rein. And it's very exciting. I got to say the sort of just the shift in the attitude at DC and stuff, it's been great.
Is it fair to characterize it more as consistency of character is more important than like the hard lines of continuity that I think?
Yes. I mean, from what, again, I'm not totally in the know. Like there's certain things I'm not really aware of yet, but from what I know, it's like we're boiling down the characters to their core again. And, it was kind of up to the creators on different books, to figure out what continuity worked and what we didn't need and to kind of build a new continuity that was a mix of the old and some new stuff. So, I mean, that was really fun for me. You get rid of some of the baggage on characters that would have just held me back and would have hindered me in telling stories. But I got to keep the cool things that worked, you know. So
I hope it's to the point, and again, this is supposition on my part, that one of the things that drove me nuts when the first issue of Flashpoint came out, people are like, well, if this is happening, why is Batman still going on? And I roll my eyes and say, you know, everything can't be to the second. And can you at least say that, okay, let the other writers finish their stories while Flashpoint, you know, gets started and finishes? And obviously we're seeing that. I mean, you know, we just mentioned JT on Green Arrow and stuff. JT was able to wrap up his Green Arrow story, technically from a shipping standpoint. The issue came out after Flashpoint, well, number one. But who cares? You know, it's like I hope that each of you in the reboot are allowed to kind of tell your own story without having to worry about, well, Wonder Woman isn't scratching your ass that way in Justice League, so we can't have that in the regular Wonder Woman book, you know.
Well, I don't know. I'm not writing Wonder Woman.
I understand.
No, I got it. We should probably just talk about the books I'm doing because at this point. But the two books I'm doing are great because they're not really tied to anything else that's going on.
Okay.
In the universe. They're, as you know, I love those C and D list characters, so I really sought out those kind of properties to do, and they may be canceled after six issues for low sales, but I'm sure I have fun writing them. So I'm actually writing Animal Man.
Very cool.
And monthly Frankenstein in the Creature Commando.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So Flashpoint essentially is kind of the introduction of the new.
Yeah. But then again, it gets, you know, the Flashpoint universe is different from the new DC, so
okay,
the origin gets slightly tweaked again with Frankenstein number one, the ongoing, and certain things from the Flashpoint world bleed over into the new DC. So it's kind of, you take it's a mix of the old Commandos and stuff from Flashpoint into this new version, you know. So,
excellent.
It's very, very cool.
Well,
I'm on the second script right now, and the first issue was the funnest thing I've ever written. And I don't know. I really, really think it's going to be good. My artist is Alberto Ponticelli, who did The Unknown Soldier on Vertigo. And he's killing it. It's amazing.
That's excellent, man. Well, it's that kind of distinct art and your kind of writing, I think, that are going to make people pay attention to some of these C&T characters.
Yeah. I got Travel Foreman on Animal Man with me,
and wow,
it's when people see what he's doing, it's gonna And it's going to sound like hype, but I swear to God, these pages are blowing my mind. It's like, this guy is so incredible. My only fear is that once Jim and Jeff start seeing how good his stuff is on Animal Man, they're going to pull him off to do Superman or something. They're going to lose him after like 4 issues. It's like insane. The art is so good. It's killer. Yeah.
That's fantastic, man. Well, and, you know, let's talk about Animal Man. Well, I mean, obviously we'll see where that is. I'm sure you can't say much, but
I don't mean to be a prick, but they told me I'm allowed to confirm the projects I'm doing, but we're not allowed to talk about any story details yet.
Fair enough. Okay, so, fair enough.
I have to leave it at that.
All right, understood. That's cool.
The only other thing I could say is that J.G. Jones is doing the covers for Frankenstein, and Jose Villarubia is coloring it, so the whole Sweet Tooth team is on that with Alberto Ponticelli. So that's going to be fun.
Excellent. Well, that's really cool, man, and you're an excellent choice for Animal Man. I can't imagine. And I'm glad I can't imagine, because then you can surprise me with some of the ideas you got for Buddy Baker.
Oh, man. That book is like – it's the closest thing to writing a creator-owned book that I've ever had, writing a non-creator-owned book. It just feels so natural for me. And I don't know. There's just something about him and his family and his kids that it just really works. And I just have a really great time writing it. And I have some really big things planned for the Baker family.
That's terrific. You know, and I've got to say, not only obviously Grant Morrison's wonderful run, I loved what Jerry Conway did a couple years ago.
Yeah, I love that too. I really enjoyed that. Yeah.
Great miniseries, and it was great to see Jerry still got it. And, you know, he gets Buddy. And I've really enjoyed Buddy's journey in old continuity that happened post 52 and during 52.
Yeah. Well, just hearing some sweet stuff, obviously, to
sure.
Origin and stuff. But, yeah, I can't say too much, but I would say that, you know, obviously I went back and reread everything, and the most underrated Animal Man stuff ever was the Jamie Delano stuff that has never been collected. And
very true.
Man, a Diary of Anne Joy. I really liked reading that stuff again, and especially the first couple storylines he did. They were just phenomenal, and a lot of the ideas and stuff he introduced in those later issues of the Vertigo series, I've taken them and kind of repurposed them for myself, and basically I'm stealing a lot of his good ideas and making myself look better, but he did some great stuff, and Steve Pugh drew those issues, and oh man, they're fantastic. I hope maybe Animal Man will do well enough that DC might trade some of that stuff or something. But
yeah, I hope so. Yeah, you're right.
People hit eBay or something and try to get some of that stuff, but I think, you know, they won't be disappointed.
Very cool. Well, again, like we said, your Flashpoint Commandos stuff, Creatures of the Unknown, I suppose.
Yes.
Frankenstein and Creatures of the Unknown is...
Frankenstein. I like that better. Frankenstein. Let's change it.
Right now. Excellent. Call the editor.
That's the tweak to his origin. His name is now Frankenstein. He has an evil twin brother named Hankenstein.
It works for me, man. No, that's awesome. say his name. Ibram?
No.
You want me to struggle with it? That's
I don't know. I don't know how to say his name. I think it's Ibram Robertson.
There we go.
Great, though. He's doing some really nice stuff. So
excellent. And Monkey doing those awesome covers. And,
yeah, that was great. I mean, I called Doug and asked him, because I know he's really busy, but I just couldn't picture Frankenstein without Doug Pankey. So I had to try, and he said yes. So that was great.
And I've said this to Doug before, and I'm sure you feel the same way. It's the neck. He gives them these football player weightlifter necks.
I love his art on that book so much, man. That Seven Soldiers miniseries he did that's when I really fell in love with Doug Mankey's art, and I love that miniseries. And I always was so disappointed DC didn't do more with the character afterwards, because I loved it so much. It was just this fun, pulpy sci-fi take on the character, and it's so cool that I get to be the one that, you know, ends up doing it, so it's great.
Excellent, man. And now this is a 3-issue miniseries during Flashpoint.
Yeah. And then it's going to be launched into an ongoing in September. So.
And there's obviously a freedom with these things. It's cool, by the way, dude, that you're the one who pitched this to the editors.
That was pretty neat. And Frankenstein was not part of the Flashpoint plan, you know, at all. It wasn't even on the radar. And there was a couple books they kind of suggested maybe I would pitch for, and they were okay, but none of them really kind of, you know, really did it for me. And I have I love all these old C&D list characters, and I have all these great old weird war tales, you know, with Creature Commandos. And I thought maybe I'll pitch something with them, you know. And so I pitched the Creature Commandos as part of Flashpoint, and they really liked it. And I don't know if it was Jeff or Eddie Braganza who suggested that we use the Grant Morrison Frankenstein in that team. And as soon as he said that, it just clicked, and it was meant to be. So.
Are we going to see flashes then of them in World War II plus modern day stuff?
Yes, the first issue starts in World War II.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool too.
Actually, see a fist fight between Hitler and Frankenstein.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
No. That's fantastic.
Well, I won't tell you who wins, but it's Frankenstein.
And what I like about Flashpoint too is we are really learning about this world in a very concentrated period of time. Yeah. And I think that's awesome that they're even doing things like callbacks to the past and how the past is different.
You know what? Again, I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I don't think DC had any plans to show any flashbacks or anything that wasn't present-day Flashpoint until I pitched the idea for the World War II stuff. And they were a little hesitant at first to do any flashbacks, but I convinced them that it would be cool to see how the Frankenstein influenced the war in a different way, and that helped change this world as well. So,
sure.
So,
that's the thing. From issue one of Flashpoint, this to me is a lot of fun. There are callbacks to ciphers of the Bronze and Silver Age, but we know we're not necessarily getting the same heroes as were depicted back then.
I think by the time this airs, the first issue will be out, so I can talk a little bit about it. But basically, Frankenstein and the Commandos, they show up and kind of take care of the Nazis, and as a result, there was never any need for the JSA or the All-Star Squadron to have been born. And that right there is a huge change, you know? So it's, that's really cool.
No, that's fantastic, man.
It's fun.
Well, that's the thing, because, you know, so many people online, and I know that's just a minority, but they've got loud voices, are like, well, now that the reboot's happening, maybe Flashpoint doesn't matter. And I'm like, I think you're missing a lot of really interesting stories. And obviously,
the reason why it matters is because a lot of the characters and concepts in the Flashpoint world are going to bleed over and become part of this new DC universe.
So, certainly.
That's why it matters.
No, and that was my assumption. And obviously, that's the thing. Not only is this a broom to kind of sweep away, you know, this old continuity, but obviously, yeah, you're planting the seeds of what's to come. Yeah.
And we did new characters in this Flashpoint miniseries, like new characters to the DC universe that are going to become new characters in the new DC universe as well. So it's, and I'm sure I'm not the only one doing that. So.
Very cool. And let's talk about some of these characters, because you've got Griffin the Werewolf, who's Creature Commandos, and then I'm forgetting the vampire's name.
You know, the vampire's name was Velcro, which maybe in 1978 that was all right, but now it's just retarded. So I changed it. I actually, Tim Truman did like a Commandos miniseries in the 90s, and he changed the name to Velcoro, so I just stuck with that. So it's Velcoro the Vampire. And then I got rid of Medusa because...
You hate Greeks.
Well, I hate the Greeks.
I know you do. That's right.
Doug Mankey. It's like Frankenstein, the werewolf, and Dracula, like these great like Universal Pictures monster archetypes, and then a Greek god. It just didn't fit, you know? And so I thought, let's make a new female character who is more in line with that classic monster archetype. So we have like a female creature from the Black Lagoon kind of character that I created, who is the daughter of Dr. Mazursky, who was like the original guy to start Project M and create the Commandos. It's his daughter who he experimented on. And so she's a new character. And there's also the other new character is, well, Shreve was always the human member of the Commandos back in the strips. So he's still there in the World War II stuff. But in the present day stuff, his granddaughter is in the book as a monster hunter. And we kind of learn why she's so adamant on killing monsters and what it has to do with Shreve and Frankenstein and stuff like that.
Fantastic, man. And, you know, call back, you know, to the nobody, it's a shame you can't get an Invisible Man sort of character.
It was part of the pitch, but then, as I, you know, the more I was writing the pitch and writing his character, it just became too much like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen character, and we cut it, so.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood. Well, that's all right, man. No, you know, we know your affection for Universal Monsters from things like the Nobody, so that's okay. That's great, man. Yeah, when I was reading about your new female creature, I thought that was excellent.
Yeah, she's great. She ended up being my favorite character, too, and sort of the heart of the whole story that I'm telling. So it really worked out, and I kind of have this really sweet sort of innocent love story between her and Griffith the werewolf. So it's been a lot of fun to write that book for sure. And
there's
a couple other surprise guest stars popping up at the end of the second issue, which I think will please some fans. So I'm not going to say who they are yet.
Second issue of the regular series or of the
Flashpoint series?
Very interesting. Okay, cool. No, that's great, man. I'm very excited. And again, when I look in and hear about some of these new titles, I really applaud DC in general for kind of really rolling the dice on some of these things. Yeah, as you say,
stuff that's been announced so far as we're recording this has mostly been superhero stuff and Justice League related things. But I know of a lot of the books coming, and there's a lot of things that are, I mean, like Animal Man and Frankenstein, sort of B, C, D list DC characters that are getting a new lease on life, and not just superhero stuff either. There's a lot of horror stuff and sci-fi stuff and westerns, and like they're really giving things a chance. So it's going to be really cool.
That's excellent. And speaking of westerns, looking forward to and glad to have read that you're getting to do a Jonah Hex with Jimmy and Justin.
I can send you the PDF. Actually, it's that was such a thrill. I love that character and I love those guys and their take on him. And it was a long time coming. I was supposed to do a Hex story a year and a half ago, and Dan DiDio didn't want me to. it took me a year and a half to get into his good books and convince him that I could do it. He finally relented and let me do it. And I got to say, Jimmy and Justin delivered a script that I think it's such a good script. And it's such a big moment in the Hex mythos that I get to draw. It was so flattering. And I think, I don't know, some of my best art, I can't wait for it to come out. So.
That's excellent, man. You know, what I love about that book is you've got the consistency of Jimmy and Justin's writing, and then you get this wonderful showcase of so many different ideas and styles of art.
I love seeing different takes. He's such a nice-looking character. It's like Batman or something where he's so iconic that he can really survive different artistic interpretations really well. Just in drawing that issue, I looked at so much of the old stuff, and you know the J.H. Williams issue was just stunning, and then the Darwin Cook ones, and there's such great artists that have done that book. It's such a thrill for me to be part of that roll call.
Absolutely, throwbacks to guys like Giordano before he passed, and Tony DeZuniga, of course, coming back to it.
Man, he's so great.
Yeah, and then as you say too, some just the new people that
and
have come on. Yeah, Jordi Benet is really.
He's such an incredible artist.
Yeah, I kind of put him on the top shelf always as well when it comes to Hex. It is so beautiful, and he really is the perfect guy to draw the majority of it.
It's like Alex Toth and Joe Kubert somehow merged into something beautiful. I mean, he's just like incredible.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
No question. And another shout to you for Strange Adventures and Ultra.
Thanks, man. That was so much fun. That was my favorite short story I've ever done, and that goes all – the credit for that one goes to Mark Doyle, my Sweet Tooth editor, who kind of challenged me to try to do something cool with the lamest character DC. And I took the challenge and had a lot of fun with it.
Well, and, you know, I'll confess that I've always loved Ultra stories and think he is this kind of neat little thing. But in your hands, especially artistically – it became a much creepier story. And that's the thing. I mean, for being a multi-alien, certainly in the Silver Age, he was pretty adjusted to his fate. And this really was this wonderful kind of, you know, unending damnation that I think the character suffered by his metamorphosis.
I'd love to do more with him, actually, but I don't know if I'll ever get the chance. But I'd love to do the next chapter of that story somehow, you know.
I understand.
I'd love to do sci-fi, actually, someday. Maybe after Sweet Tooth, like a really hard sci-fi series or something. Let's see, who knows.
Well, that's the thing, Jeff. I really think you've kind of been able to play in all of these different genres very quickly.
I'd love to do a really long-form story, though, set, like, in deep space, you know. I don't know what exactly it would be, but I think that would be really fun.
Well, and just like you were able to, even in those brief little panels, kind of showing all the other great Silver Age DC
fun.
Sci-fi.
I wasn't sure if I'd get away with that, actually, but it went through. So, yeah, that was fun. I finally got to draw Adam Strange. So.
And Space Cabby.
Yes. Star Hawkins, come on.
Star Hawkins, absolutely, man. Well, that's why I couldn't remember if I saw you say it on Twitter or if even through our emails you told me that you were doing this, and I was just like, oh, that's awesome. So, I really did. I thought Strange Adventures was a real success from an anthology standpoint.
Yeah, it was good. I really liked it, too. It was cool. I'm really happy with that story. So.
With the day and date digital stuff coming out, I think one question that everybody has, and I'm asking you specifically just as a creator, I think the challenge is, especially to attract this new audience, is to kind of make sure that every chapter is self-contained, but also obviously, you know, you want to leave on a cliffhanger and want people to come back for the next episode. But I really wonder, for this new audience, we're used to coming in every Wednesday for yeah. books, and we're prepared to wait a month. But the new digital audience, I hope, is in the minds of the editors, publishers, and creators in terms of, you know, whatever the price point is. I don't want them to have that first experience of being coming at the end of 22 pages, say, or 20 pages, and say, "Oh, wait, the story's not over. What did I just buy here? I bought a chapter. I kind of thought I'd get more of a, you know, full experience of a story."
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how to respond to that. You know, that's the format we're working in, is the 20 page story. So
sure.
But, you know, there's original graphic novels that people can buy as well, so I guess they have the option, you know?
Understood.
Yeah,
understood.
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, that really is something that I think every level of DC is, you know, going to have to – actually, everybody that's doing digital comics. I mean, I just think that's going to be the real challenge, is exposing them to stuff and wanting them to come back, but also at least having them feel like the money they spent on that first issue was – giving them a full enough experience.
Yeah, well, I hope so too. You know, I just for myself, and I think anyone that I know, we try to put everything we can into every issue we do. So, I don't know. I haven't read the other first issues that DC is putting out yet, but I know mine for sure. Anyone can read those, not without knowing anything about the history of any of these characters, and can know, you know, by the end of that issue, they know everything they need to know about the characters and the world. So. They are accessible, so that's going to help a lot.
Fair enough. Very cool. Well, and again, those 8 pages for Ultra and everything, it's nice to see that you know, the young guys are able to write an 8-page story, because I was almost starting to wonder if that was kind of a dying art, to be able to tell a short, effective story, and obviously you're able to do it with Ultra.
The anthologies are tough. They don't sell really well, so I don't think people get a lot of a chance. You know, they don't get much chance to practice it, but you know, short stories can be really fun if you get into them, for sure.
Definitely, man. Well, this is nice going. I honestly, you know, as I always tell you when we check in, nice going. I'm enjoying what I'm reading, and the ideas that you've been able to express with what's coming with Frankenstein and the Creature Commandos sound pretty cool. Both in Flashpoint and beyond, and Animal Man. Wow, that's a great assignment.
So. Yeah, man, I can't wait for people to read the first issue. I'm so happy with it. So.
Excellent. Will that be out then? Are you part of that September wave? Or
yeah,
is it
It's all September. All 52 books start September. So, yeah, definitely. They're both first issues launched in, I think, the first 2 weeks of September. So.
Outstanding. Are we going to see you in San Diego?
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. What other SummerCon plans?
I'll be in Calgary in the middle of June, a couple weeks, and then San Diego. And that's it for me, because I'm writing 3 monthly books.
Understood, man. No, that's great. So I understand movie congratulations are in order for Essex County.
Yeah, it sounds like it's happening. I mean, the people producing it have been working on it for, oh, geez, I don't know, 2 or 3 years now. And it finally seems to be at a stage where it's going to happen. So, you know, you try not to think too much about that stuff, because I'm sure, as you know, it can fall apart at any minute.
Sure.
You know, until a DVD is on the previously viewed racks, I don't believe it's going to happen. But.
Until I'm interviewing you for the special bonus commentary, then we'll know that it's all good.
But yeah, no, it seems to be moving forward, and I mean, the director they got is really interesting. It's John Dykstra, who, you know, he's a special effects guy that did Star Wars and Spider-Man and X-Men and all that stuff. So maybe not the first person you'd think of to do something like Essex County, but at the same time, I think it's kind of interesting that they're going to take, you know, the heart of what I did and then turn it into something maybe a little more commercial and stuff. And in some ways, that might be a bit easier for me to handle than if someone was trying to, you know, eat my style and stuff. That might get a little close to home. So.
True, but, you know, I really think this is the strength of the comic book film adaptations. I think that summertime blockbuster is easy to do. And I'm glad when it is the Essex Counties or the, even the Ghost Worlds and the Road to Perdition's History of Violence, when that stuff, you know, gets Hollywood's attention and movies are made, you know that, all right, you know, comics are in the same way that books are in terms of, no, they're taking these stories seriously. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from what I hear talking to the director and what I've heard him say and stuff, he's spent his whole career doing these huge effects-driven things, right? And I think for him, this is a chance to do something quieter and more, I don't know, you know, like more character-driven stuff, but still apply his strength to it, which is effects and stuff. So I think it's a really interesting mix. And I guess the next step is now they're trying to cast the film, and they've thrown some pretty interesting names around. So that hopefully that'll happen soon.
That's great, man. Well, you know, and as we get closer and you're into the books and also into the film, you know, maybe there's more news and stuff. And I figure in the fall, you know, we might touch base in San Diego. I understand you're going to be there.
And I'll be there. And I know with Animal Man of Frankenstein, at this point, we're not allowed to talk about any details or anything like that. But, you know, as we get closer and I can talk more about that stuff, or when the books start coming out, I'd love to talk more.
Awesome, man. And yeah, I wouldn't mind reading. I wouldn't mind reading a couple of, you know, chapters too, and kind of, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one thing I would really be interested in talking more about the process of taking something like Animal Man, which has such a reputation, and, you know, the Grant Morrison stuff so revered and stuff. And I'd love to talk more about how intimidating that was to take it on, and sort of the approach I took and things like that. I think some people would find that interesting. So.
Absolutely, man. And as I said, it's been your DC mainstream choices. Ultra the Multi-Alien, perfect example of that in Strange Adventures. I told you, I loved that story. I thought it was terrific. And you really boiled it down to this really successful, you know, short story.
Well, I think these characters can all survive multiple interpretations as long as you stay true to the core of them, you know? And then if you do that, it's really interesting to see different writers and different artists interpret these characters in different ways. And for me, you know, Animal Man has a really long history and a lot of baggage with Grant Morrison and Jamie Delano and all these guys. And you could get really intimidated by that, but at the same time, you know, it can be fun to sort of take it and take what you like that they did and then add your own, you know, flavor to it. So, you know, I've been having a blast writing both books so far. It's been the most rewarding non-creator owned stuff I've ever done. So,
That's excellent. And no, it reads wonderfully. And as I said, I think we hear your voice in there as well, even though you're kind of doing the mainstream characters that you are. The conversations, I think, do run consistent with Essex County. And I'm glad to hear that everything is succeeding for you, man. I mean, I'm glad that DC is recognizing and putting you on the mainstream books that they are, but it's nice to see that your creator-owned stuff is getting its just due as well.
Yeah, it's really cool that there's not a lot of people who get the opportunity to have their foot sort of in the indie kind of creator-owned world and doing mainstream stuff, you know, at the same time. And, you know, I'm lucky to be able to do both, and I enjoy doing both, and probably wouldn't be happy just doing one or the other, so... It's great.
Fantastic, man. Well, continued success, and we will touch base briefly, I'm sure, in San Diego, but then get more in-depth in the fall with a new talk.
That sounds great. Thanks, John.
That's Jeff Lemire. Make sure you read the wrap-ups of Superboy and his Flashpoint miniseries on Frankenstein. Keep following Sweet Tooth in the pages of Vertigo, and look forward to his new Frankenstein series post-Flashpoint coming in September, one of the new 52 titles, part of the DC reboot. Now stick around. We've got TNT Falling Skies coverage coming up in just a second right here on Word Balloon after this.
You know, it's always great when brilliant minds get together and create a new drama, and you're going to see for yourself this Sunday night at 8 on the two-hour premiere of Falling Skies on TNT. It's from executive producer Steven Spielberg and DreamWorks Television. It stars Noah Wiley, and sitting here with director Greg Beeman. Now, there's been an alien invasion, but there's really a human story here, too.
This is the story of people having to dig within themselves and say, can I keep my family together? Can I build a community? Can I do the right thing? You know, as a human being, can I stay strong despite all obstacles? And that's a valid story that can go for a long time and that is relevant to everybody.
That's so true. You know, especially as a dad, because the premiere really tugged my heartstrings with Noah Wiley's character, Tom Mason, when he started searching for his alien abducted son. This is going to be a tremendous series. You're going to want to see it from the beginning, especially if you've got a close family. So join the resistance now at FallingSkies.com and check out the two-hour premiere of Falling Skies this Sunday night at 8 o'clock and every Sunday night after that at 9 on TNT.
Okay, so not only was that a sponsorship, but that was also a commercial that I produced for my radio station, one of the radio stations I work for in Chicago. Reason was I was on the press junket for Falling Skies at TNT, and I'm happy to say that it's an excellent show. I do recommend watching it. It's on at 9 p.m. Eastern. That commercial was made for the Central Time Zone, Chicago, so that's why it said it starts at 8. So if you're on the coasts, Eastern and Pacific, it starts at 9 o'clock. But I want to get into the press junket, and it afforded me the chance to talk to cast and crew from Falling Skies. So let's get things started and hear my conversation with Moon Bloodgood, who you might remember from such films as Blood Rain 2, but also great television series, and we touch upon these as Daybreak and Journeyman, and now she's got a new sci-fi show, Falling Skies. Here's my conversation with Moon Bloodgood right here on Word Balloon.
Well, I'm very curious because I know you're a veteran of science fiction, and you've done a lot of great work in science fiction.
Thank you.
Why this show?
I think, you know, the obvious being it's Steven Spielberg, and then the writer Robert Rodat, who wrote Saving Private Ryan. But when I read it, it was a very intimate story about a family and about all these people just trying to maintain their sense of normalcy and their own humanity when they're up against such a sad situation.
There's this interesting blend, too, and I think this has been happening in science fiction, of smarter human stories, along with the bells and whistles that come with science fiction.
Ooh, I like what you said,
You've been, you know, a big part of that in all these films and also the television series. And I'm curious about the evolution, specifically in television, of shows like Daybreak and Journeyman that had really smart writing. And I think this show's already shown that it has smart writing, too.
I have been a part of great projects that unfortunately weren't as successful as I would have liked. Daybreak and Journeyman I loved. I absolutely loved. I love high-concept TV. I'm not someone who relaxes by watching reality TV or comedy. I actually tend to watch a lot of science fiction and thrillers and things like that. It's intriguing for me. It gets me mentally stimulated. And maybe that's why I end up working on these kind of projects, because I excel in those auditions because it's something I really genuinely love. I enjoy shows like that. We are a little saturated with them, but you're right. It's smarter human story and still the bells and whistles of science fiction, but more of an intriguing human story as a primary story.
And also compared to films, obviously, it seems like television has kind of taken the place of a lot more richer story, not only from the writing standpoint, but from the acting.
It's been interesting to watch. Television is changing, especially cable television. It's becoming more cinematic. Our show is 10 episodes. It feels like a movie. It doesn't read like your normal television show. You get to take, you know, there's not the same limitation than cable as there is in a network show. But you're just seeing so many actors working on TV now because there's just more options. There's better quality now.
How about this cast? Tell me about working with Noah and everybody else. Good interplay with Noah in the first couple episodes.
Thank you. Noah's a veteran, so is Will Patton. You know, these are actors that have been around a long time. They've proven themselves. They know what they're doing. They have a lot of depth. I learned a lot working with them. Science fiction is something that was new to Noah Wiley, but you can see he excels amazingly in the show. He does a really good job.
And being the doctor, I mean, and you say you're a fan of science fiction. Always a classic role in science fiction, from Dr. McCoy to the Battlestar Galactica doctors and various.
You're right. There is always the doctor, because when the world's falling apart and you're and it's post-apocalyptic, you need a doctor. You know, you don't. That's like the primary thing that you need. You're the most in demand. It's interesting having to play a doctor with Noah Wiley. Isn't that great? He gets to sit there and hold a gun, which is what I usually do, and I get to sit there and I have a stethoscope.
Any action scenes coming up for you?
I guess you can call them some action scenes, but my character is not primarily an action-oriented character. She's a doctor, and she's someone that's not really, you know, for violence. It's not her thing. But you do see her come face-to-face with some violent situations, and how my character responds is interesting.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on much you've done so far in science fiction, and really looking forward to this season. It looks great, honestly.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
Now we switch to an interview that I did with Mark Verheiden and Greg Beeman at the same time. And let me let you in on a little radio magic. You heard the commercial before. The voice who narrated that was my good friend Kaz, who is our afternoon guy at The Mix, one of the radio stations here in Chicago that I work for. I actually did the interviews, and you'll tell because you might hear that same snippet of Greg Beeman talking that was in the commercial. But they let me go down the interview junket instead of Kaz, which was great. I went to Sedona, Arizona. Not really sure why. The show takes place in Boston, but it was a beautiful countryside, wonderful red rocks, mountains, and the clay facades of these mountains in Arizona, a beautiful spa, and a very relaxing weekend. But you'll hear my conversation now with Mark Verheiden and Greg Beeman. There's some, even some comic news regarding Falling Skies. So listen closely to this talk with Mark and Greg right here on Word Balloon.
I am thrilled to be talking to both of you because of your backgrounds as well as this current show. The show is excellent, and I've enjoyed the first couple hours that I've watched. But I see an evolution in science fiction television and films. But let's talk about TV. I mean, the background you both have in, at Galactica, Heroes, Smallville. What are some of the things I think you're bringing to this show that, you know, the good stuff from before and maybe correcting some things that maybe didn't work the last time?
Well, I think just from a personal standpoint, I think speaking for both of us, we're both science fiction fans and geeks going way back. So we're fans first, and then the fact that we're able to do this for a living is just icing on the cake. When I look at a project, I just look for something that's fun, what feels like fun, and these worlds are fun. You know, if you do a cop show, a guy pulls a gun and shoots it, guy falls over dead. If you pull a gun on an alien, you get to invent things. And that's really the fun part of working on a show like Falling Skies.
Great.
Well, I think what attracted me to this show, when you watch... I wasn't on the pilot, and so I went into a dark room at DreamWorks, and they pushed play... I watched the pilot, and I came out of the room, and I go, okay, guys, if you want me, I'm in. And the reason I felt that way is because there's a potential here to go a long time, because this is a story of people having to dig within themselves and say, can I keep my family together? Can I build a community? Can I do the right thing? You know, as a human being, can I stay strong despite all obstacles? And that's a valid story that can go for a long time, and that is relevant to everybody.
And it seems like you guys, if the series continues, will be breaking these stories. Each season will be its own kind of chapter. Is that fair to characterize it that way in terms of the big overall concern?
Well, I suspect, you know, that the creators of the show, Steven Spielberg and Robert Rodat, have, you know, ideas for where the show's going.
Okay.
And, as each season goes along, they'll figure it out as they go, basically. But with the sort of guideposts that they've laid out.
Mark, you've got a big comic book background, and I understand there is a Falling Skies graphic novel that's...
There is. Dark Horse has done a graphic novel that was fun because the show starts 6 months after the invasion, so the graphic novel starts about a month after the invasion.
Okay.
And if you want to read a story that catches up with our characters earlier and you see... Tom Mason's character's son has been kidnapped by the aliens. You see that in the comic. You also see how they end up meeting up with Captain Weaver. And the comic ends basically 1 minute before the series starts. So if you want to sort of, you know, get a background on it, you can. It's a really good story. It turned out great. Dark Horse did a great job on it.
Paul Tobin scripted it, and I guess it's available now online, but it will be collected into a...
Yes, it's online at darkhorse.com and TNT.com, but a published version will be out, I think, in early July.
Excellent. Will you guys be at Comic-Con?
I hope to be, but I don't know yet.
Yeah,
we were last year.
Oh, excellent. Okay, very good.
I always go, so I'll be there.
You'll
no matter
be there
what.
No matter what. Yeah, on fantastic. One side or the other of the stage.
So the scope of this show, Greg, I mean, it really seems, and I know you've got big money behind it with DreamWorks and Spielberg, but it really does seem like for television, this really has that cinematic feel.
Well, it's still a television show, and we did it on a pretty tight schedule and a pretty tight budget, but... The trick is that, you know, experts in their field were hired, and what you see is what was there. You know, we blew up a lot of stuff. We created a lot of rubble. We blew up cars. We set things on fire. But, like, if you pan the camera 1 inch to the right, there was no more rubble. It's all very tight specs.
But it feels like there are 300 survivors. I mean, that's the thing. So I doubt there are 300 extras walking around.
Well, no, we had 300 extras.
Oh, okay.
It's a big show, yeah. It's a big show. And as much as we mostly cared about the humanity and the intimate stories, all of us want to make it a feature film on a TV screen.
And Mark, I told you last night that I felt in a very good way, positive way, I see conflicts in this show between the characters, specifically Tom and Weaver, that are reminiscent of things that we saw in Galactica, for example. Right. And I think fans of Galactica will find an Earthbound kinship to it.
Right. Again, Earthbound being the point.
Absolutely.
It's an argument less between military people and more between one guy, Tom, who... it really takes the more sort of humanist point of view, which is we don't have that many people left. So suicide missions and attacks are a real problem. Versus a guy, Will Patton, who's very damaged, and because of how he's damaged, really wants to take it to the aliens right now. And that becomes a running issue between these two men. But again, I think we tried to approach it character-based rather than fisticuffs-based. I don't want to give spoilers, but the resolution or discussion of that, I think, happens in a real way as opposed to sort of some high. It's a show about the best in people, and so
it comes through. It certainly does. I mean, no good character conflict, and very very impressed with the first couple of episodes I've seen. Looking forward to more. Greg Beeman, Mark Verheiden, pleasure talking to you, and continued success.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chicago.
And finally, I got a couple minutes with Noah Wiley. You remember him, his great work on ER. One of my favorite movies that he did for TNT, I'm not talking about The Librarian, I'm talking about Pirates of Silicon Valley. If you've never seen it, from 1999, an excellent movie that he made with Anthony Michael Hall. It was the two of them as Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. Noah did an amazing job as Steve Jobs, and it really was one of the first times that I ever saw him kind of be a jerk as a character. And it was such a wonderful role, and I'm glad that he obviously remembers the film fondly as well. But he talks about his character on Falling Sky. This is the star. He is kind of our Captain Kirk, if you will, our Apollo, if you want to make a Battlestar Galactica comparison. But I think he really does an excellent job and grounds the show in reality, despite the science fiction. But in the same way that William Shatner made you believe in the rubber lizard and the rocks that he was jumping off of, I think Noah does a great job of believing the reality of this series. And it really comes through in his performance. So here's my talk with Noah Wiley.
You're Chicago?
I'm Chicago, indeed.
Right on. I like Chicago.
Excellent. Well, I like Falling Sky so far. I think it's been very good. I've watched the first couple episodes.
Oh, cool.
What made you choose this project?
Combination of things. New character, new genre, chance to work with TNT again, chance to work with DreamWorks again, chance to look like a hero to my 8-year-old son. All were big draws for me.
Excellent. And, you know, you've already been a hero for TNT with the Librarian series, but I appreciate the more adult level of Falling Skies, and I think it's a good combination of science fiction and the human story as well.
Yeah, I like science fiction, but it's not the first genre I go to. But this really is a character drama, a family drama at its heart that's set in the context of a science fiction alien show. The aliens are very great, and they're very scary, and it's great for storytelling, but there's a lot of human drama that comes into play as these people sort of try to negotiate their different personalities and how they're going to survive in this post-apocalyptic world. That makes for even better storytelling, and that's what I found really interesting.
And also, as a veteran of ER, I appreciate the evolution of television, and it really seems that TV is the place now to tell these more complicated stories and complicated characters.
Absolutely, especially with the advent of the 10-episode season. You know, when you're not diluting your storytelling over 22, 24, 26 episodes, and you can really focus on 10 or 12, you're crafting your whole season from the outset, knowing exactly where you're going to end up, not just this year, but probably over two or three seasons, and allows you to create your mythology and have it be airtight, so nothing's haphazard.
Tom is a teacher, but he's also a fighter, and relying on his military history expertise
in
the field for the first time.
He's former American history professor at Boston University, academic background for sure, and that skill set is seemingly totally unnecessary and superfluous to the matters of the day. And then, like any good character arc, he realizes that actually the fact that he's as familiar as he is with military strategy and tactic, the fact that he was a teacher, and that this is very much a child army, not a professional military army, puts him in a better position to be a leader than he thought at the outset. So it's a pretty good arc to play.
Great interaction with Will Patton, too, and I appreciate the conflict that's already there.
He's worth his weight in gold. We were supposed to kill his character off in the pilot, and then we started playing and thought, no.
Good for you.
We need to keep this guy around for a while.
Excellent, and I hope, I've seen 3 hours now, and I guess 2 episodes. I hope we'll see more of him and more.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm very proud of the first season. I'm anxious to get back to work and make some more.
And of course, too, the You've also got that weighed with the responsibility of your two children, but also looking for the third child.
Yeah, I play a father of three. Two of my boys are with me. I'm widowed in the invasion. My wife was killed, and my middle son has been abducted by the aliens, as have many, many adolescents who seem to be being pressed into some kind of slave labor force by the aliens attaching these harnesses to the kid's spine, which sort of give them this mind control over them. And my middle son is missing, but I know where he is, and it's the initial conflict is wanting to go and get him back and keep my family alive in the context of being given this larger responsibility of caring for these 300 civilians and leading them out of Boston away from where I know my son is.
Compare the writing that you had on ER to a show like this.
It's on par. You know, ER was certainly at the outset an all-star team of some of the great one-hour drama writers. We had guys from Hill Street Blues, and we had guys from L.A. Law, and, you know, all the great Bochco shows of the past. This is also a bit of an all-star team, but it's pulling from a different genre. These are all the guys that come off of Lost and Battlestar who know this world extremely well, and yeah, we were very fortunate with the level of scripts we got this year.
As you're playing with sci-fi now, is it something that you might want to do outside of this show and then try and do other...
If it's good, you know, sure. I like it when it's metaphorical storytelling. I like it when it's serving as allegory. When it leads front and center with science fiction, it turns me off a little bit. But I would recommend to anybody who's not a sci-fi fan to give this show a chance, because there are a lot of other elements in it that I found intriguing that you probably will too.
A very human story going on along with the science fiction.
True.
Absolutely. And a great relationship with TNT going back to Pirates of Silicon Valley. That's the first time I saw you really, you know, kind of change from the good guy next door that you played on ER. And it was kind of a complicated character, as this character is.
Yeah, that was a lot of... I actually would very much like to do a sequel to that movie. I think what Steve Jobs has done after that movie ended has been truly remarkable.
You got to talk to your TNT guys. I think maybe there is a sequel in there. There's a lot of evolution.
I'd love to make more Librarian movies too. And yeah, TNT's cool. Been an unbelievable partner. They have a real hands-off managerial style, but they have great taste and they program very well, market very well, and they send us to really pretty places to talk about it.
Good talking to you. No, a pleasure meeting you.
My pleasure.
So there you go. Like I said, I really like the first three episodes of Falling Skies that I saw. So do yourself a favor. Check it out for yourself. The series premiere of Falling Skies happens Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. It's a two-hour premiere, and then it'll be on weekly at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, Sunday nights on TNT. That'll do it for this episode of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. John Suntress reminding you that today's episode was brought to you by TNT's Falling Skies, but also by the Summit City Comic Con happening Saturday in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the Grand Wayne Center. It's from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. Saturday, June 18th, this coming Saturday. If you're in the tri-state area, you don't want to miss it. It's a great one-day show. Wonderful representation from a lot of great Midwest creators, but also special guests Dennis Cohen, Gary Friedrich, Tom Scioli's going to be there, Mike Norton is going to be there, Tim Seeley's going to be there, the guys from Four Star Studios, Katie Cook is there, over 130 creators are all on hand, and it's a great opportunity to get wonderful sketches from people like Mike Schwartz of the great digital comic Oceanverse, Steve Bryan, our friend from Athena Voltaire, Dave Wagner is going to be there. I'm moderating the digital panel and also the Dennis Cohen panel, so looking forward to that, and other panels happening as well. For all the details, go to their website, SummitCityComicCon.com. It's just $10 for admission. Kids under 11 are admitted free. The Summit City Comic Con this Saturday from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m., Fort Wayne, Indiana, at the Grand Wayne Center. Thanks again for listening to Word Balloon. Great episodes still coming. In fact, we've got so many interviews. Expect more double features here on Word Balloon in the next few weeks as we head towards San Diego. We've got so many people that want to talk and that we have spoken to, and I want to get it all out for you in time for San Diego, including these panels that I'll be doing at the Summit City Comic Con. But make sure you come out to it and see it live for yourself. Until next time, thanks again for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shinky Productions, copyright 2011.